Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live on TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. I am your host, Drew Mandel, alongside my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Pleased to be joined with you this morning. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, back-to-back nights for the Winnipeg Jets, back-to-back victories for the Jets as they get off the 2015-16 season on the right foot, taking care of business against two teams that coming into both those games, they would say, these are games we need to have, and the Jets took care of business pretty easily last night.
Yeah, and they're both hard games, even though they're against teams, Richie, that might not be playoff teams in the Eastern Conference, but they're hard games because they're back-to-back. And the Boston Bruins obviously gave them quite a scare in the first period. And, you know, I tweeted this during the game. I mean, if Andre Pavlik doesn't make three or four really good saves, the Boston Bruins might go up 2-0, 3-0 in that first period, and it's a completely different game. But you have to like not only that the Jets have outscored the opposition by a margin of 3-1, but the fact that the Jets have gotten balanced scoring. No player has scored two goals in the game against Boston, Drew. You had six different goal scores yesterday against the Devils. You had three different goal scores, but you're also seeing a very nice mix of lines, I think. And we were a little bit apprehensive before the season started with where everyone was going to fit in right now. But if you look at that second line, I've been really impressed by that second line with Mark Scheifele and Matthew Perreault and Nikolai Ehlers. Such a creative line, and they're getting some nice goals. You saw Mark Scheifele score a really nice goal off of that wrist shot again. Andrew Ladd's been great. Blake Wheeler's been great. So you have to be impressed. It's only two games. It's against a couple of teams, especially when you're talking about my Devils. It's going to be a very long year. You're going to hear that all year. So those teams aren't exactly, you know, the la creme de la creme of the NHL, but there's still two really good wins here to start off the season. And if you're able to get a win, Richie, against either of the Islanders or the Rangers, and you're able to come back to Winnipeg and get 6 of 8 points, that's a pretty darn good road trip.
Yeah, I agree with that, Ezzy. I mean, you're exactly right. You won two games against two really bad teams, but they were two really bad teams on the road. That's important. I mean, you know, road games and that road record is going to be important. So not a great start in the first period of game one. But Pavlik bailed them out, and then they righted the ship, and they were really good in the second and third period of the first game. I didn't see last night's game except for the third period. But, you know, it seemed like a little bit more of a, I wouldn't say necessarily as balanced, but the flow of the game was a little bit more like a National Hockey League game. You know, not as many chances both ways, kind of like that. Boston was a little bit all over the place. Yeah, run and gun, which I enjoy watching, you know, as an observer. But the team, you know, as you mentioned, they've good depth. You get two good performances from your netminders. I mean, the season has started off as well as it possibly can. Now you go into New York and New York, Brooklyn and then Manhattan. If you lose both, you still come back. All right, you know, we got 4 out of 8 on the road. We're feeling okay about ourselves. If we take care of business at home all year, we'll be fine with that kind of ratio.
Sure.
Or close to it, at least.
That's what they use. Play 500 on the road, play, you know, win two-thirds of your games at home.
Yeah, something along those lines, you're going to be okay. If you get any points in these next two games, you're going to feel really good about yourself. I'm interested to see how the team plays in these next two games in the sense that Boston's defense is horrendous. No Char on Seidenberg. It's even worse, but it's not good with them. And the Devils' forwards are terrible. So, I mean, those are the two things that you look at and you say, okay, this is why you have to win these games.
Sure.
But it doesn't take away from the fact that the Jets played well and played a more skilled game as we thought they would. And what I'm looking to see is, you know, in the first game, the first period when Boston was playing the offensive zone a lot, didn't have to defend, they were taking it to the Jets. And then eventually the Jets turned it around and Boston had to defend and wasn't able to do that. With New Jersey, they just don't have the forwards to capitalize on it. So when they play against the Islanders and the Rangers, who are balanced and are able to, you know, throw both of you, how did the Jets react defensively to that?
Well, I mean, when you're playing against the Rangers and the Islanders coming up Monday, Tuesday, of course, you're going to be playing against teams that are in the upper echelon of the NHL. I mean, certainly the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference, and I mean, you can argue whether or not you really think that the Islanders or the Rangers are Stanley Cup contenders, but in the East especially, any team pretty much that makes the playoffs could probably make a run into the finals.
Yeah,
so you're stepping up. You're stepping up in weight class against better competition.
Yeah, but it's the idea, like, can they? They're playing a skill game, which I like to see. My next question is, can they play the defensive game and not give up something on the back end to score more on the front end?
You're saying because the Devils, if whatever they gave up, the Devils aren't skilled enough to capitalize offensively on any sort of miscues.
Yeah, therefore, as you can speak to, I mean, their forwards just aren't good enough. You're seeing guys like Tuukka Rask actually playing significant roles on these teams that were fourth-line players on the Jets last year.
Yeah, and the Devils had some good chances. When the game was 2-0, Mike Camilleri had a good chance, and Michael Hutchinson made a good save. But the Devils are not the Rangers, and they're not the Islanders. The Rangers are, I mean, they're the President's Trophy champions, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're really good teams, and they have much better defenses when you're talking about the Rangers and Islanders compared to the Devils and the Bruins. But I think, Drew, I wanted to make the point that one of the things that impressed me the most about both of these games is that the Jets didn't get off to a very good start in either of these games, especially the Boston game, which we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And I think it shows you a lot that on the road, in a back-to-back situation, the Jets were able to respond from a poor start. Both goalies, Pavlik and Hutchinson, were able to keep the team in the game. And, you know, they were able to respond and get goals. And that has been our concern heading into the preseason. And, you know, with all the young talent on the roster, four new forwards, you know, is Burmistrov going to be able to fit in there on a third-line role, not playing center on the wing? And Ehlers has looked great on the second line on the right wing with Scheifele and Perreault. And Andrew Ladd and Brian Little, even though they didn't have a full preseason, they missed the first four or five games there. Andrew Ladd's been excellent. He's popped in a couple goals. I think he had 2 points yesterday. So, I mean, it's impressive that they're able to get these two wins. But now you're going up against the Islanders, who've got Travis Hamonic. They've got Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk, and the Rangers, who have got Ryan McDonagh and Dan Girardi and Mark Stahl. I mean, these are good teams. So, again, if the Jets are able to get a win out of these next two games, and you have the six-game homestand coming up, I mean, you're putting yourself in a really good position because the Jets last year lost four of their first five games, and they put themselves behind the eight ball right off the beginning of the season.
Sure.
Right?
They had that good win last season in Arizona to open the season. Then they went on to play the California teams, and it was ugly performance after ugly performance against the California teams. Then it took them some time to get their feet under them. So far, the Jets have taken care of business against the two opponents they've faced to start the year, both of whom aren't as good as the Jets are. What's actually impressed me more, sort of, it happened in both games, is the Jets got scored on when they had a lead. And then they came back immediately and sort of just strangled any thought that the opponent had about making a comeback. We saw, you know, the goal in Boston, the short side, really good shot. But I think Pavlik probably wants that wants
Pasternak
to make that
goal
save.
He wants back. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
He wanted the Pasternak goal. And then you saw yesterday the Devils' only goal, you know, the Tlusti goal.
Trouba's goal.
Pardon me?
Trouba's goal.
Yeah, Trouba's goal, but you know, credited to Tlusti. Yeah. Of course, you know, he scores against the Jets and Stempniak with the assist, but that's all fine and good. And the Jets immediately come back. You know, Devils think they got some momentum. You know, home opener, they're only down by a goal. Less than 4 minutes later, Ladd scores on the power play, and it's a 3-1 game, and that's the end.
By the way.
The pass by Perreault. Yeah.
Beautiful pass.
Set him up perfectly for it. So, I mean, that's just what you want to see. You want to see the response. You know, the Jets sort of get punched in the face a little bit, and you want to see that response immediately. And you saw it. You certainly saw it in both games. You know, the Bruins opening the scoring, the Jets, you know, getting through that terrible first period, and then just absolutely exerting their will on the Boston Bruins for the remainder of that game.
And, guys, I think if you're Paul Maurice, you probably wouldn't like those starts every game, but I think at the end of the day, on the road, in a back-to-back situation, you get 4 points. That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm sure that they'll address those starts, and they'll try not to come out as sluggish. But I thought once the Jets started using their speed...
Did you think their start last night was that bad?
It wasn't as bad as the Boston game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were okay. It wasn't as good.
They were outshot
as they wanted.
At a point in time, they were being outshot by the Devils 4-1 early in the first period.
That was very early.
Yeah.
And we're talking the first 7 or 8 minutes.
Right, and then the Jets ended up outshooting the Devils 12-4 for the first period in total. So the Jets, you know, the Devils went a good, you know, 10, 12 minutes in the first period without registering another shot on goal. The Jets, sort of just get the home team's got the adrenaline. It's their home opener. They're going to come in waves at you. We saw it in Boston. You just sort of have to, you know, handle that and not get not get bowled over by it, and then it becomes a hockey game again, where usually the most skilled team is going to win out.
I mean, yeah, there's a couple of things. I mean, in terms of New Jersey, they had guys playing on the power play, Ezzy, that have passed through waivers within the last year.
Sure.
David Schlemko, guys available, like, I mean, Jordan Tutu was on the power play yesterday, guys. I mean, let's put this into perspective, right? So
he actually looked pretty good in the third period.
Yeah, you know, Jiří Tlusti played the most power play minutes on the team aside from Travis Zajac and Mike Camilleri. So put it into perspective. Having said that, another thing I like about the Jets is if you look at their ice time last night, mm-hmm. it's very balanced.
Same as it was on Thursday night.
Nobody on the team. Bufflin plays the most on the team. That's propped up by 4 minutes on the power play. But you see everybody kind of in the 20 to 16 minute range. And your fourth line plays 8 minutes or so, about average of 8 minutes. Patan and Kopp and Thorburn. I like that. I think if you're able to roll these lines and you have the depth on defense, we know that, and roll the four lines up front, and you got two goalies. You're going to stay rested, you're going to stay fresh, and you're going to be more effective.
Well, how many times last year did we see the Jets play their fourth line, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, yep. if that? So, I mean, you're already seeing the advantage of, I mean, this is a coach. Paul Maurice obviously didn't trust last year's fourth line to be in most situations.
Which I think for the most part was fair. I mean, I think he trusted them maybe less than he even should have at some points, but this year he knows they're more talented.
Yeah, at least to start the year, and it also, I mean, we'll see that better idea against the opponents on Monday and Tuesday, because yes. you can roll four lines against the Bruins and the Devils because they're not very good. We'll see, what the ice time happens to the fourth line against the Rangers and the Islanders, teams that are far better than the Devils and the Bruins are. The scoring, the goal scoring for the Jets, the 15 out of 18 players having points through six periods of hockey.
And that speaks to the depth and rolling the lines and giving people an opportunity. I mean, Mark Scheifele looking really good, quick wrist shot, which we know he has, and I like his just getting that off quickly and not playing around with it too much. Sometimes he overhandles, and I like the quick decisions by him. I think he's helped by the fact that he's playing with Nikolaj Ehlers, and obviously Ehlers is helped by playing with him because you're playing skill with skill. And that's a big help, I think, for the squad. So, I mean, Drew, you have to remember, this is two games. Sure. I've liked what I've seen in the parts of the games, obviously, that I've watched. But, I mean, we don't have answered is a couple of the questions that I wonder about. How do they play against physical teams? Because I don't think they're as physical as they were before. Yeah, that's a big question for me. And how do they defend? So I don't think they've really been challenged in that regard, aside from the first period in Boston. Now, of course, they control that, so there's credit to them. But these are a couple of the questions we don't have answered yet. You need to see 20 games to have them play against different teams to evaluate it. But they've come in, played against two bad teams, on the road, beat them, as good teams do, and that's a positive sign.
In the first two games, when you have 9 goals scored, and you've only given up 3 goals, and you're healthy,
yeah,
mm-hmm. that's important. I mean, there are teams right now that aren't healthy. Look at the Bruins. And everything looks really good. The only negative aspect of these two wins I can find is the starts. And that's
probably if you're nitpicking when for the most part.
And that's a concern if that becomes something regular mm-hmm. or something we see on a regular basis. But for the most part, yeah. I think that you really like what you have to see out of the Winnipeg Jets in the first two games. There's been balanced scoring. The goaltending has kept them in the game when their starts haven't been good. They didn't have a power play against the Bruins. They scored a power play goal yesterday.
Yep. Yep.
They haven't taken too many dumb penalties. And,
that's going to be part of not being as physical. More skilled. I think you're going to take probably less penalties. That's
Buff was throwing the weight around for sure yesterday.
Though. Yeah. Bufflin was, he had a big hit at center ice. Yep. Or was it Stewart who had a big hit at center ice, I think, yesterday? I can't recall. Exactly.
But it was Buff.
Was it Buff? Okay. Yeah. There you go. I mean, yeah, they're not going to shy away from physicality, but they're not going to be they were rock 'em sock 'em hockey for some periods of time last season when teams would come in. It's a completely different team, because I remember when there were teams that came into Winnipeg or Winnipeg went there last season and they hadn't seen the Jets, before, and they couldn't believe how they finished every single check.
Yeah.
And I think you're not going to see that this year. I don't necessarily know that that's a bad thing, just because the physical toll it takes on teams when you finish every single check every single game for 82 games.
Well, that's a credit to Paul Maurice and that you coach to the players that you've been given, as opposed to trying to make them fit into a system that you have.
Yes.
So last year they play a physical, especially before the Kane Bogosian trade. I mean, they got less physical after that. What he did was he said, okay, this is how we're built. We're pretty big and we're pretty fast, so we're going to play a physical game. And now he's just saying, well, we're smaller and we're fast and we're going to play a little more of a skill game. So I like that he's adapted to the players that he has on the roster. When coaches try and put square peg round hole, it can screw things up quickly.
I will say, though, that they still got to use that physicality, because the Winnipeg Jets fed off of that last year. And when they are hitting...
Right, but who's going to be the big hitter in this?
No, season? Well, I'm not... Well...
Look up front. Just look up front. I mean, Adam Lowry is physical.
Yeah.
Andrew Ladd can be physical.
Yeah.
Who are these guys are going to, and Thorburn, sure. There's going to be some physical players in Boston, of course, but in the back end, they're a little more physical. Well, some of the guys are. But as a whole, this is not the Columbus Blue Jackets series, guys. Like, you read the reports of last night's game, the Rangers got annihilated physically by the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Just saying, Rich, you don't want to stray too far away from that, because that was your identity last year.
Fair enough.
So even though you have skilled players like Nikolai Ehlers and Nick Batan on the team, you don't want to completely forget that was one of the reasons why you were successful last year.
Fair enough. But as the Chicago, Tampa, I mean, again, people copy the teams that have had success. I mean, they're not too physical, those teams.
I don't know if the Jets have the talent that Chicago
Tampa
has.
Well, they don't. They don't. But you know what I mean? They're trying to get to that point.
Sure.
And I'm still a ways away, but...
Let's head to break. When we come back, more on the first two Winnipeg Jets games to start the season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an Icy Saturday on TSN 1290.
Towards center, intercepted there by Bufflin. Across the line now, shooting, and it's a goal for Winnipeg as Scheifele let a rocket go, and he scores!
What a great release by Mark Scheifele, who's able to pick it up in that near side faceoff circle. And the velocity of it, I think, somewhat fooled Tuukka Rask.
And it beat Rask, and we are tied at one.
That's Mark Scheifele scoring in Boston, the first goal of the 2015-16 NHL season for the Winnipeg Jets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, the official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Richie, I'm not sure if you saw it. You're not that active on social media, but you were invited over to Frank's place for turkey tomorrow. Because
really?
Yeah, he only extended the invite to the Illegal Curve guys who predicted the Jets were going to make the playoffs.
Thank you, Will.
Ezzy and I are...
Getting off to a good start.
Yeah, you're off to a good start. Ezzy and I are not included in the Zappia family Thanksgiving, but you are invited over there to Frank's place.
Well, I'm
going
to have the turkey legs, and I'll just have them there waiting for Ezzy and you, but then I'll just eat them.
Okay.
So I got to tell you, though, quickly, for the two guys who didn't pick the Jets to make the playoffs, of course, two games in, but I'm... Anyhow... On that point, only because, Drew, I think you picked the Sharks to replace the Jets or take the spot that you thought the Jets may be contending for.
Mm-hmm.
And as he took the Moose, right? No, but...
Moose lost last night, by the way, in
5-3.
Toronto.
Jokes aside...
Jay Harrison, two goals.
I thought that... I watched the Sharks play against the Kings. Now, granted, the Kings lose to Arizona last night, so are they good? But I think they still are good. The Sharks look tremendous. And I got to tell you, they look like a squad. They were revitalized and... You know, Paul Martin is a guy I've been critical of, and I don't love his game, and I certainly wouldn't have given that contract, but he does fit into what they need and complements the top four there. Now their puck-moving ability up front, and they look a little bit more free of the pressures that they had because there is no real pressure there now. Martin Jones looked good, and the team played a really good five-man game, which is a kind of a staple of a Pete DeBoer squad. So and it's one game, but I thought the San Jose Sharks, if they play like that on a night-in, night-out basis, I didn't pick them to make the playoffs, but they're going to make the playoffs if they play like that.
We'll have much more on the Sharks later on in the show. We'll be joined by Curtis Pashelka. He's the San Jose Mercury News, of the San Jose Mercury News, the Sharks beat writer. So we'll talk about the Sharks coming up next hour here on the program.
Took over from David Pollock.
Yes, our good friend David Pollock retired. We wish him all the best in retirement, and Curtis is the new Sharks beat writer.
Yeah, excited to talk to Curtis. Are we going to talk more about this Zappia group rack of lamb here? The official legal curve rack of lamb?
Yes, sure.
So this
we now have a rack of lamb to go with our sandwich. So
Frank
things are going
tweeted
well.
This out yesterday.
Yeah.
Or no, it was actually 2 days ago. And it looks incredible.
Yeah, it does look like
an impressive. Now we've got a sandwich and a rack of lamb.
So we're happy as can be.
Yeah.
Mark Scheifele's obviously scoring in Boston. And
I hope so. That's where they were playing.
I know. And he scored last night as well in New Jersey. He looks, I mean, I know it's only two games, but just in those two games, he looked like a more confident player and somebody growing into their role on this team.
I'll tell you what he looks like. He looks like the future first-line center of the Winnipeg Jets. That's what he looks like. And the way he gets off that shot, mm-hmm. I mean, if he's getting off that shot like that, I wouldn't be surprised if Mark Scheifele scores 35 goals this year. I mean, he has a really good shot, and I don't think that I'm really surprising anybody by saying that. It's pretty captain obvious. And we've seen Mark Scheifele with that beautiful wrist shot in the last couple of years, Rich. But, I mean, that
he
thing
had
was,
it when he came into the league, and it's just gotten better.
I mean, Corey Schneider and Tuukka Rask are very good goalies.
Yeah.
Like, these are top mm-hmm. goalies. And Mark Scheifele ripped that thing top corner. Like, they didn't have a chance. That thing was a snipe. He's a sniper. He's looked excellent. And, again, I had my reservations about putting Nikolai Ehlers on the right side with Matthew Perreault. Not because I don't think Nikolai Ehlers is a great player. I just thought Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler were so good last year, Rich. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised if the top line struggles, they don't drop Blake Wheeler down to that second line. But, hey, I know it's only two games, but the skill and creativity with Perreault, Scheifele, and Ehlers is really incredible. I mean, to me, that was the best line on the ice for both games.
I mean, his strengths are what, you know, I don't think they've really changed. Maybe he's more confident, but he's always been a pretty good, he's always really sees the ice well, has a really good quick release on the wrist shot, and I mean, he's gotten stronger, of course, and he's a good passer. He sees the game well.
He's been drinking his BioSteel, Richie.
Yeah, exactly, you know, pumping up weight, and I think it's all a good sign. I mean, do I say, you know, he's going to be that first-line center? I still have to see more, as he. And see who he's playing against and how he succeeds in terms of playing. Again, it's very hard. I like what I've seen, but it's very hard to judge based on who they've played.
Sure. Just because, I mean, he's doing what.
I'm not taking credit. I'm not taking anything away from him. Right. I'm just saying you need to see more in terms of other. But again, when you're playing with that skill, you're going to get chances. You're going to get opportunities. You have to see a little bit more of who's driving that. Is it Ehlers driving it or him? And at the end of the day, if that becomes like a little mini combo, who cares as long as it's producing if you're the coach?
Sure.
And Rich, to your point, we had Jack Edwards on the debut of the NHL This Week show. Jack Edwards, of course, play-by-play man for Nesson.
Yeah, for the Boston Bruins.
For the Boston Bruins. Yeah. We talked about the defense. I mean, how much do they miss Zdeno Chara? How much do they miss Dougie Hamilton? We knew the Devils, even though they've got a lot of young talent there with Severson and Larson and Jelena, we knew that the Devils were going to be a work in progress. But the Bruins, I mean, they look like a mess on defense. They've got some issues there.
You're saying the Matt Irwin Trotman combination wasn't a good combination.
Well, Matt Irwin was absolutely pickpocketed by Ladd.
I mean, Ladd gets full credit for that move, but it wasn't like it was an especially tricky move. He just came at the guy, and Matt Irwin just sort of gave him the puck.
No, and Matt Irwin's a veteran defenseman. You know, it's fine, but I mean, they've got Morrow and Miller and Trotman. I mean, these guys are not Boychuk, Chara, and Seidenberg.
Yeah, no, I mean, nothing about the Boston Bruins. You know, with the defense currently, and you know, who knows? I mean, Zdeno Chara is still a fan. He's at the downside of his career. It's not like he was a world-beating defenseman the last couple of years. He's been, felled with injuries. He's
better
struggling
than Matt
a little
Irwin,
bit.
Drew.
Of course, he's better than Matt Irwin. But even if you put Seidenberg and Chara in that lineup, that's not a playoff team in Boston.
No.
Well, I mean, that's it's just
that team stinks.
That team is pretty
that
lousy.
Team stinks. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, then you sort of expected them. People would point to them as maybe they're going to be the kings of the East. Let's say that they might bounce back after a disappointing.
Who said that?
Well, I'm just saying people expect the Bruins to always be a contender, but this Bruins team is not a contender by any stretch of the imagination anymore.
I don't think they're going to be maybe as bad as we're getting at here. I still think they're going to be competitive for a playoff spot. I don't think by any means they're going to be 15th or 16th in the East.
Well, I mean, they're not going to be that.
I still think they're an 85-90 point team probably.
Other young players for the Jets, what do you think of, Kopp, Burmistrov making his return to the lineup?
No, that Burmistrov played I didn't see all last night's game, so I'll speak more about Thursday's game, but I thought Burmistrov played a pretty good game. I thought he got better as the game went on, and you know, he's still a pretty similar player to when he left. I mean, there's drastic changes there at all. Maybe he's playing with more talented players, and therefore the production is going up. But, you know, he's certainly a National Hockey League player, and he possesses the puck well, and he was doing some good things. And he, I thought he helped sustain pressure on shifts, what it was on the Stafford goal from Lowry and Chiarot on Thursday. So, yeah, I mean, again, you're encouraged by it, Drew. I mean, you can do more, though. Like, I don't want to keep stating it. Like, it doesn't mean that this team's not going to make them again. Pick them to make the playoffs, but they are playing against bad teams, and when you play against bad teams, you can do a lot more out there.
Of course, and we can only evaluate the games they've played. I mean, you know, you're right. We'll know a lot more about this team in 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
It's like the crazy articles I'm seeing about, you know, who had a better day, who's better, looking better so far, Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel. Well, it's been one game, so how about you write that article after 40 games?
Sure. I mean, that's just people filling pointless airtime. I mean, that's what that is. No one's asking, you know, is this, you know, is Burmistrov a bust? Is Ehlers a bust? Anything along those lines. They played two games, and the two games have been good victories for the Jets against teams that they should beat. And that's what they've taken care of.
Yeah, and when we're talking about the Islanders and Rangers games, Richie, on Wednesday, we might be singing a different tune. But you have to call them like you see them. And these have been two really good, clean wins.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not perfect. I mean, I would like to see better starts out of the Jets. But, I mean, especially the game against Boston. They came out of the first intermission and absolutely dominated the Bruins through the neutral zone with their speed. And against the Devils, when the Jets went up 2-0 and then even 2-1 in the third period, the Jets needed to shut down a team in their arena.
Mm-hmm.
Second game of a back-to-back, they did it. And you got the 2 points. And that's all that matters. So 3-1, 4-1, at that point, it doesn't really matter. You've already taken 2 points from the Bruins, and now you've got 2 points from the Devils. You've got four of a possible 4 points. You're going into the Islanders feeling good. That's all that matters. And now they're going up against two of the East's best, and we'll see how they do.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Dave Maloney, New York Rangers analyst on MSG TV, is going to join us to discuss the Rangers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. It's the one and only Eagle Double G. Shortly past 9:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by Dave Maloney. Dave is the New York Rangers analyst on MSG TV. Dave, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be on a, you know, the opening week of the National Hockey League, and boy, the Jets and Rangers off to a good start.
So yep.
Sets up, they'll face one another. They both have a game between now and then, but they'll both face one another on Tuesday night. It should be interesting.
Yeah, at the very least, both teams will have the winning records, if not undefeated records at that point in time. Wanted to obviously talk about the Rangers with you. They get off to the good start. They go to Chicago and they beat the Blackhawks on their banner-raising ceremony. Then last night, they go to Columbus and they beat the Blue Jackets. They double up a good Blue Jackets team, 4-2. You know, this Rangers team sort of had some changes in the offseason. Carl Hagelin left. They had some shifting of players. You know, what's jumped out to you so far through the first two Rangers games that you were surprised about, let's say, entering the season?
Well, I think what the Rangers have done over the last couple of years, they've been a pretty successful franchise, despite the fact they've played as many playoff games as anybody has in the last 4 years and haven't been able to win. And ultimately, I think everyone, that's what they want to accomplish. From a Rangers standpoint, what that has done has continued to kind of create a culture where this team just kind of goes about its business, and you hate to say find a way to win, but find a way to win. And most people will observe a Ranger team as being a quick, skilled team, and that's probably right, but I'm not sure they're given enough credit to be able to grind it out, and that's certainly what they did last night in Columbus against a, you know, a heavy Columbus team after you know, facing a Chicago team who, you can say what you like, is still a pretty skilled team. So yeah, they certainly led by their goaltender, who you know, this will be the 11th consecutive season. He'll be as important a player as anyone, and that, of course, would be Henrik Lundqvist. So it's a group that's enjoyed some success, not the penultimate success that they're seeking, but are very confident in who they are and have gotten out of the gates here.
Dave, Oscar Lindberg scored a goal last night. He's got 2 goals in 2 games. First question, I guess two-part question, A, who is Oscar Lindberg? And part B of that, how surprised were you that he made the Rangers and he's been so successful early on here?
He probably threw a bit of a curve into the thing. You know, most teams go to camp with the cap situation being what it is, and the lineups are basically set. But I think what he and a kid from Winnipeg, Dylan McElrath, did was to kind of come and really earn a further look and then finally earn a spot in the roster. Lindberg was a second-round pick originally of the Arizona Coyotes and was acquired in a deal 3 years ago and had a very, very good second half of the season in the American Hockey League last season. And did have one game when the Rangers ran into a bit of injury issues last season down the stretch, played. And I played a game, and I think the ultimate, his game really are his smarts. And I mean, there are so many guys of Swedish descent in this league who are so smart. Mm-hmm. And you put them into the lineup in 3 zones, and they seem to be able to get the job done. I'm not sure that anyone thought he was going to have goals in back-to-back games to start the season, but that's certainly a bonus. And any team's success, lots of times you get stories that come out of oblivion, and I'm not sure this has come out of oblivion, but he's been good, Oscar Lindberg, in back-to-back opening games.
Dave, are you surprised Alain Vigneault's maybe lack of patience with the first line, Brassard, Zuccarello, and Nash, with his comments on the ice at practice and after the first game?
No, not really. I mean, you know, your high-profile guys are expected to be high-profile guys, and if they're going about their business in a manner that they're giving themselves a chance, then all is forgiven. And I'm not sure even to, you know, you listen to the comments from Zuccarello after last night's game and Brassard after game one, they admitted they weren't quite good enough. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens is, and I can't comment on most other teams the way they practice, but it was a practice, off-day practice in Chicago, where the Rangers pride themselves in being a very, very efficient, high-tempo practice team, and the Rangers' top line wasn't fitting the bill, and the coach called them out. And over the course of a long season, a coach is going to have to find ways, different times to have his guys pay attention, and it just happened to be the top group coming off a less-than-stellar opening night and a less-than-stellar practice, evidently. But yeah, it got their attention. Certainly Zuccarello was good last night, scored a couple, and away you go.
Dave, you like Kevin Hayes on the wing better than center?
Well, you know, I talked to Kevin Hayes yesterday, and a young guy, he doesn't care where he's at. You know, from his standpoint, it doesn't matter. I think you could maybe conclude with a bigger kind of lumbering guy. There's two ways to look at it, right? You know, the bigger lumbering guy who's really good with the puck is going to have a little more space and time and room in the middle of the ice. And yet in the middle of the ice, he's expected to cover more of the ice. So it's 6 of 1, half dozen of the other. I think the Rangers are still, you know, it's very early in the season, still trying to figure out who exactly is going to be over the course of time that sixth guy in the top six role. But he, you know, he throws one on the net last night, gets himself on the board, made a nice play in Chicago in the game winner. So, you know, when you're winning, a lot of little things fall into place, and Kevin Hayes has done a nice job. He didn't have a great camp. I think there was an expectation that he was going to be in the middle. But you move bodies around and you're 2-0 after 2 games.
Hey, good problem to have. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Dave Maloney. Dave is a New York Rangers analyst for MSG. Dave, Keith Yandle acquired last season, sort of right at the trade deadline. The Rangers paid a pretty hefty price to get him out of Arizona. What's the expectation for Keith Yandle for this season? He's a free agent at the end of the year.
Right.
You know, what are the Rangers hoping to get out of Keith Yandle?
Well, I think, you know, you need to have someone in the way the game's played to move the puck efficiently out of your own end. And I think first and foremost, that is one of Yandel's skill. There are a couple times you're going to have to close your eyes as to where that puck ultimately ends up. But he has impressed me as a guy that really does find the person away from the play and gets the puck there. And one of the, it was interesting to listen to Todd Richards talk about the Rangers and Vigneault, how they play. And a lot of how they play is really predicated on that efficient movement quickly out of their own end of the ice. So I think ultimately Yandel fits that mold. He is a bit of a high wire act there. The power play is another situation where I think most people assume he should be an asset there. It's interesting, you know, when he came, that was the first question. The Rangers really don't have that big cannon off the blue line. And Yandel was asked about being the guy that's going to fire the puck from the blue line, and he admitted right away that he's not a shooter. He's a passer. So he fits nicely in the rotation with Kevin Klein when they get to six. When they want to kind of, you know, tighten things up, Klein moves up with Stahl and Boyle flips back with Yandel. So Keith Yandel for a long time was a horse with the Coyotes. His minutes aren't going to be the same. How he's used probably is not going to be the same. But it's a pretty deep blue line, and Yandel's going to be an important guy there.
Dave, Jarrett Stoll, the Rangers signed Jarrett Stoll in the offseason. I know a lot of fans here in Winnipeg were thinking that he might be a good fit for the Jets' fourth line, but they obviously went younger and went with Andrew Kopp out of the University of Michigan. How has Jarrett Stoll looked in the first couple of games for the Rangers? How's he fit in there?
Well, he's fit in really well. I mean, I don't think there's there were any issues about where he was going to fit. I think the thing that kind of surprised people, we talked about him earlier, was Lindbergh. You'd wonder if the Rangers had knowing how Lindbergh was going to evolve, maybe Jarrett Stoll does end up in Winnipeg or somewhere else. But that being said, he's bumped Dominic Moore to the right side. What he does, there's a couple of things. It's certainly documented the Cup winners that he was an important part of that LA King team. And you talk about, at the end of the day, most times the team that wins, you know, the depth is really an asset. So he's a depth player. He's a face-off guy. He's, you know, he's all the things that he's billed to be. And to me, with his off-ice issues in L.A. and the way he stood up and took responsibility for what happened, said an awful lot about his character. And you don't win without character. And Jarrett Stoll certainly fits that bill on a number of fronts.
That's a mouthful, Stahl and Stahl there. So Sam Rosen's got his work cut out for him. Dave, you look at Chris Kreider, and Jets fans may remember him specifically from burning dust in Buffalo in the neutral zone last year against the Jets with a third period goal that sent the Rangers off with a victory. But he's so dynamic speed-wise, and he's big and he's strong. I know he posted 21 goals last year. Do you see him getting into the 25-30 range this year?
Yeah, yes, I do. I think that's a fair expectation. I mean, the thing with Chris is going to be an elite player, and most will observe the number of players in the league. You have to bring it every night. And it's a couple of things, you know, most poignantly about Kreider. You know, did you see Kreider, you know, in a manner of, wow, wasn't he good? And then, did you see Kreider? In a sense, was he anywhere to be seen? You know, so that is still the issue with him. I thought he was really good against Chicago, and then last night, not quite as visible. And to get to that level for him, that will be the next. Can he get there? Because he certainly has the physical tools, and he creates so many things with who he is and how he skates. I don't think it's unfair at all to expect that he can get to 30. So, but can he be the guy that on a night in, shift out basis is that guy?
Dave, wanted to ask you about Matt Zuccarello. I mean, he, coming back from a real scary injury, one of the scarier injuries that you've heard about in the NHL over the last number of years, the brain contusion, the hairline fracture of his skull after being hit with the puck last season. Couldn't speak for a while, if I'm not mistaken. Right. You know, how's he looked? 2 goals in 2 games, so that's a pretty good sign. I mean, does he seem like the Matt Zuccarello of old before the injury to you?
Yeah, particularly last night. It was a big boy game last night. Columbus makes you pay physically, and he was as involved as he has always been as a member of this league. He's certainly not one of the bigger statured guys in the league, and I think he could be, you know, we talked about Vigneault calling out his top guys. I think he could be forgiven a little bit in game one, given the circumstances of his injury. He had a really good camp. He began skating, I believe, mid-July. He had a charity game over in his home country of Norway, and a number of his mates went over to partake in that. And that was really the first time he got out on the ice. But I think subconsciously, you can't help but think that there might be a little bit of trepidation given the severity of what he'd gone through. But it didn't last long. I thought he was great last night. He got involved a couple times with Boone Jenner, who's an absolute horse. And Zuccarello, I mentioned the phrase before about Lindbergh. There are an awful lot of intelligent players in this Ranger team. And I think, you know, we get caught up in the speed and skill, and everybody wants to play fast now. But can you play fast and make a play and go to areas and be firm with quickness and make a play? And I think that all of the above is an apt description of Zuccarello. And he got himself on the board twice last night. And so for his own, you know, sense of confidence, I hope he certainly continues to show what he showed last night. And you're right, that was a horrific kind of a freak of nature, perfect storm sort of thing that happened when he got dinged in the first round against Pittsburgh last year.
Final question for you, Dave. You know, Glenn Sather, you know, left his position, of course, as GM, and Jeff Gordon, who's working with him for many years, took over. Any difference around the organization? I mean, Glenn Sather, when he was there, obviously, is a big presence, and I know maybe people still in this area see him as the Oiler, but he was with the Rangers for a long period of time. Is there any different around the organization?
No, not really. You know, the Rangers, you know, like a lot of big market teams, are really afforded the luxury of having depth everywhere. I mean, there's, you know, they've got depth in their coaching staff, they've got depth in their managing staff, they've got depth in their trading staff, and it was basically a seamless transition. I mean, I think Glenn still certainly has Glenn Sather fingerprints all over this roster. There's no question. But Jeff Gordon did a nice job. He had, you know, he had a pretty tight salary situation, had to get Stepan redone and different things like that. Had to figure out, all right, well, Hagelin, you know, like a lot of teams, when you improve, your depth guys get priced out of your salary structure, and that's exactly what happened with Hagelin. So you've got to find a way there to move them around, see if you can't get somebody back, and Emerson Edom was the result of that. So I think there's no question. Glenn Sather was a very important part of what's gone on here, and it really goes back to the trade deadline right before the first lockout, where the Rangers decided that that way of buying their way to glory just isn't going to work. And all the bodies, Brian Leetch was shipped off, and they began to be determined to build through the draft. So I think Glenn, you know, Glenn would never err on the side of taking a crack at a veteran that had some talent. But I think once this franchise decided, you know what, we're going to try and build the way that fundamentally you have to build to give yourself a chance, he did a good job. So he's still around. It's a different feel with Gordon, but make no mistake, he's a pretty important guy in this franchise.
Dave, Glenn is still chewing the cigars, not smoking them, right?
Yeah. Well, what we did know is he didn't make the road trip. So You know, so he'll pick and choose the spots where he's going to travel on the road, I'm sure. If it's out to California where there's golf involved, you can bet that he'll make that trip. But other than that, I'm not sure I'm going to see him in Buffalo.
Dave Maloney covers the New York Rangers for MSG TV. He's a Rangers analyst. Dave, appreciate your time this morning. Have a good call of tonight's Rangers-Blue Jackets rematch, and we'll see you in Winnipeg later this year.
Yeah, great. Thanks an awful lot, guys. It's always fun, and let's do it again.
Thanks very much, Dave. Okay, head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Dave Maloney, MSG analyst, talking about the Rangers. In case you missed any of it, it'll be available on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. Big thanks to Keener Jerseys for their support of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike Babcock and the Toronto Maple Leafs returned to Joe Louis Arena last night. The Leafs were manhandled by the Red Wings 4-0, I believe, was the final.
Red Wings are a really good team this year.
Yeah, Justin Abdelkader with a hat trick within 26 minutes of action last
night. Dylan Larkin
looking pretty good. Mike Commodore, former NHL player, had some comments about Mike Babcock's return to Joe Louis Arena. This is courtesy of his Twitter feed, @commie22.
Be careful here, Drew.
Yeah, that's...
I will bleep where I need to bleep. Mike Commodore's account has been verified, so we do know that this is him.
Was this subsequently verified or was it already verified?
Already verified.
Okay.
This is during the Leafs Red Wings game last night. Mike Commodore, 3-0. Babs, you posing arrogant piece of bleep. Welcome back to the rink where everyone that met you hates you. I mean, if you want, and you know, 4-0. Keep it rolling, Detroit. The Wings are just killing it tonight. They look motivated. Hello.
Which I think is true, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure that they were motivated. Hello. This account has been hacked. Please disregard all tweets. Wait a sec. It hasn't been hacked. Mike Babcock is a piece of bleep. Go Wings. It's a very funny comments from Mike Commodore. Mike Commodore does not like Mike Babcock. It's been this isn't the first time he's expressed his displeasure towards Red Wings head coach. They had, he played for Babcock on two separate occasions, and he really does blame Mike Babcock for the end of his career in the NHL, saying that he was made assurances when he signed with Detroit, and that Mike Babcock went back on his word. And as a result, that's what Mike Commodore feels. He's not in the NHL anymore as a result of Mike Babcock.
By the way, Mike Zeisberger of the Toronto Sun wrote an article about this.
Oh, did he?
An entire article about these tweets. So this isn't something that, you know, only us have picked up on.
No, I'm sure that,
Yeah, Mike Commodore.
How do you get an entire article out of that?
Well, it's a whole article. You can check it out.
I believe
I'll maybe throw it up on Twitter, but Mike Commodore, it's mentioned in the article, was a healthy scratch regularly with the Detroit Red Wings and has that history, Richie, with Mike Babcock. So, I mean, it's a little bit surprising to see a former NHLer rip one of the best coaches of all time, but he obviously doesn't like him.
I think that's safe to say.
I think we actually spoke about it on the air. I can read this is the comments about 2 years ago now. This is him regarding Mike Babcock and signing in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
They offered me a 1-year deal worth $1 million. My gut was screaming, don't take it. You've got one chance. If it doesn't go well, you're done in the NHL. I told my agent, I don't want to play in Detroit for Mike Babcock. I don't trust him. Call him back and tell him thank you. We'll get back to you. My agent then told me that the GM put a 15-minute time limit on the offer. I guess I would have been Ken Holland. I needed to make up my mind in 15 minutes or he was going to pull the offer off the table. This was July 1st. Free agency had just started 10 minutes prior. I called the GM and told him, Ken, Mike Commodore here. I like you. You're a good guy. Is it you who wants me or the coach? Ken Holland said that he wanted me, and so did Babcock. So I told him that I would love to play for Ken, and I would love to play for the Red Wings, but I didn't trust the coach from previous experience. So I called the coach, but now he had 10 minutes left. I called him, Babs, Mike Commodore here. Please be honest with me. Do you want me on your hockey team or not? He said he did. I wanted to know if I'd get an opportunity. I told him I'm not looking for anything special, but that I needed to know if I was going to get a fair shot and a chance to play. He said, I want you on my team. You will get a fair chance. We need someone physical on the back end with the right shot. I want you. You will play. And then he keeps going on and on. So if you see later, the later quote is, I'll just continue here. I hung up the phone, 5 minutes left. My gut screamed, say no. This coach screwed me over 9 years ago. He buried me in the paper after I had a good camp in Anaheim. He buried me so I would look bad so he could then play his boy from juniors, who was an undrafted rookie at camp that year, Kurt Sauer. So,
and for the record, Mike Commodore has had a much better career than Kurt Sauer ever did.
Yeah, Kurt Sauer wasn't bad there for a couple of years. But though the there's a big left side. You know, Kurt Sauer is a big left side stay-at-home guy. Commodore's kind of the right side
stay-at-home guy.
I'm definitely following Mike Commodore on Twitter now.
Anyhow, you can see that this is not something that's the first time this has come to be. So, and hey, let me tell you something. Let's give credit where credit is due. I mean, he has his opinion. I'm sure Mike Babcock has his opinion about Mike Commodore. But don't criticize a player for giving his opinion.
No, we much appreciate when it happens. It's all too rare that you actually get a good quote from anybody. Andrew Ladd spoke to the media about his contract status earlier in the week.
Yeah, I mean, we're still in the same spot. So, you know, for me, I'm not going to, after this point, I'm probably not going to answer any questions about it. We don't need that distraction here. So we'll just leave that where it is. And it was the best of the team is the way that I'm going to go. So I'll decide that myself.
If the team continues to play well, starting off well, if this team looks like they're going to make a, maybe not a run, but if they're going to be a playoff team and if they're going to be successful, how much longer can the Jets let this drag out for before at some point in time Andrew Ladd just says, screw it, I'm going to free agency. You can make me an offer and, I'll hear it on July 1st.
Sure, he loves every win.
Every win makes him more money.
Everyone makes some more money and everyone gives them more leverage. Every day that goes by gives them more leverage. Every day that goes by with a win gives them even more leverage. We said it on the air so many times. I mean, Kevin Cheveldayoff is not he's not an aggressive GM, but he's got to make a decision here in the next little while. And the problem, we're restating it. We've talked about it ad nauseum here. If you win and are in a playoff position, it makes it almost impossible to trade Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien. The only easy part is if you lose, and if you lose, then you're losing and you feel more pressure anyways for not having a successful team. So he's let this drag on far too long, and I still think Ladd gets done here in the next little bit. Byfuglien, I don't think gets done.
Yeah, I do think Andrew Ladd still signs in Winnipeg. I just don't think you can let your captain go. And it hasn't been a distraction for the Winnipeg Jets so far, Drew. Two wins, Andrew Ladd's got two goals. But to answer your question, it will have to be a distraction for the team as the season progresses and as they get closer to the playoffs without that contract, because then the reality of him either being traded or leaving in the summer in free agency becomes much more of a reality.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Brent Seabrook signed a big contract extension with the Chicago Blackhawks. We'll discuss that impact on Dustin Byfuglien and his contract negotiations. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Kane back with it. And McCain works it back to the point. Drive by Seabrook. Score! Brent Seabrook, the overtime winner. And the Chicago Blackhawks take it 3-2.
Spurgeon almost gave it away. In fact, he did. Byfuglien with Wheeler, 2-on-1. Byfuglien scores! Dustin Byfuglien in overtime, and the Winnipeg Jets win it 2-1.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. This segment of the program brought to you by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba and their 40th annual luncheon. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. That's why the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba is proud to support the Elizabeth Fry Society of Manitoba and to fund their Learn for Life literacy program. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba or to purchase tickets to their 40th anniversary luncheon, contact the Jewish Foundation at jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520. Gentlemen, Brent Seabrook, the Chicago Blackhawks, big contract extension in the last couple of weeks, 8 years,
$55 million, average annual value of $6.875 million. We all know that Seabrook's a key member of that Blackhawks blue line alongside Duncan Keith. Seabrook will be 31 years old when this contract takes effect next season. What impact does this contract have on the Winnipeg Jets and Dustin Byfuglien and his asking price as he heads into his free agency year at the end of this season?
Well, before we get into that, and I think Richie would probably be a little bit better to answer that question, but I am a huge Brent Seabrook fan. You guys know that. I've always been a big Brent Seabrook fan, and Duncan Keith is obviously the best defenseman on the Chicago Blackhawks, but I think Brent Seabrook is really underrated for how good of a defenseman he is. I mean, this is a guy that is an Olympic-caliber defenseman. And I was a little bit surprised, Richie, that they gave him the 8 years. Thought it might be 5 or 6 years. But when you have a guy who's won 3 Stanley Cups with this core group of players, you know, the Taves, Kane, Keith, all these guys, Hossa, not surprised that they gave him 8 years. And there's obviously going to be some type of impact on the Byfuglien contract extension or the future contract extension because it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
But Seabrook, to me, is a little bit of a different defenseman than Byfuglien. Well, quite a bit of a different defenseman than Byfuglien. Doesn't have quite the offensive abilities that Byfuglien has, but he is physical, and he can play top-pairing minutes. So I think it'll have an impact, Rich. But for the Chicago Blackhawks, it's a no-brainer, because if Brent Seabrook, Richie, becomes a UFA, just like Dustin Byfuglien, if he becomes a UFA, there's going to be a lot of teams that are calling his agent.
Well, the thing about Seabrook is he's better defenseman than Byfuglien in that you can play him in all situations. He's a top-pairing right-side guy. Pretty solid offensively, not overly gifted. He's got a good slap shot. So, I mean, the truth is Byfuglien's a tremendously gifted offensive player, but Seabrook's certainly more than serviceable offensively, very good defensively. Not the fastest skater, but skates well enough to do what he needs to do. Extremely smart, physical, as he mentioned. So, I mean, he's a leader. He does everything you need him to do. He wouldn't have got the 8 years, but he would have got more on the open market, just because of how he can stabilize your back end. Are they paying him a little bit for what he did before for them? Maybe, but again, that's what the market would have bared. So I personally think that I have no issue with that contract, and maybe they're paying him a little bit too much at the end of it, and especially based on the way he plays physically. But also have to remember that Chicago Blackhawks team plays an exceptional amount of time in the neutral zone, offensive zone, so he's not getting rammed to the boards like a team that's playing defense all the time. So I thought they had to bring him back. They're paying him more than Keith because Keith signed that deal a long time ago. That was one thing I was watching for. Keith's at a $5.5 million cap hit. But the core is there together, right? We'll see what happens. Patrick Kane's situation, he's playing right now, and we can obviously don't know enough about that. But the point is Kane, Hossa, Taves, Keith, Seabrook. That core is there. They're going to be beating up on a lot of teams.
You know, Richie, I was looking up Seabrook's stats in preparation for this segment. And Brent Seabrook has only missed 10 games in the last 9 years. 10 games. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy,
durable.
Even though he throws the weight around and he's played all of those playoff games, and by the way, he elevates his game in the playoffs. He's like Danny Briere and some of these guys that when the playoffs start, he really turns it up. And his offensive points per game goes up a little bit when he gets into those situations. But he's an iron man. He doesn't miss a lot of hockey. So if you're Stan Bowman, you're probably not that reticent to sign him to an eight-year deal, knowing that he's only missed 10 games in the last 9 years.
Bowman's had a pretty easy gig. You just keep the core that you were given.
Sure. If your only job is to make sure that Taves, Kane, Keith, and Seabrook are all together.
That's your main job, right?
Yeah.
That's your main gig. And then the other stuff around the side, okay, or around that core you can do. And sometimes he's been successful. Sometimes he hasn't been as successful. But if you have that core, I mean, it's amazing what you can do.
So back to my original question now.
How does it affect him? Free agent-wise, I think Seabrook probably got even more per year. But it certainly helps. The duration of the deal helps Byfuglien get probably a longer deal. You look at the ages of the players. Right?
Same age.
Yeah, look at how far the contract goes. And obviously, you're capped at 7 years in the free agent market. And I don't think anybody will give him 7 years, frankly. But it certainly helps him ask for that. And then cap-wise, are you going to say, does it limit his contract? Well, he's just better offensively and can do that for you. So I'm not sure, really. Basically, I'll put it this way. He won't get as long And if he doesn't get as long, he'll get paid more per year, likely. So I'm not sure if it has any change. I don't think it changes it much, to be honest.
So you don't think? So you're saying that, you know, if the Jets are negotiating with Bufflin, and you know Bufflin's agent sees this Seabrook contract, you don't think he calls up Cheveldayoff and the Jets management and says, whatever the contract length is, it starts with an 8.
Well, he can do whatever he wants. He's just not going to get that in the market.
You don't think he'll get that on the open market?
No, I do not. He'll get 7 years max. I don't even think he'll get 7 years.
Really?
6 years max.
Well, Richie, going back to your article, I thought that the article that was posted, by the way, back in August, maybe we can repost it.
I'll link it on illegalcurve.com, or I'll link it via our Twitter feed, @illegalcurve.
You know, going back to the defenseman, I remember that Richie had his comparables. You're talking Chris Letang, a little bit more offensive upside than a Brent Seabrook, but the main guys that I thought were better comparables for Bufflin, Johnny Boychuk, Dion Phaneuf, Anton Strahlman, Mike Green, I think those contracts that have already been signed, I think the agent is probably using those as comparables. And this Brent Seabrook, I think Brent Seabrook is a little bit of a step above Bufflin. I agree with you, Rich. I mean, you know, I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but like, I think Seabrook, you're talking about like borderline Hall of Famer. I mean, like, this guy is a really good defenseman. And if, even though Duncan Keith obviously plays 30 minutes, I mean, like, look at what Seabrook has done. Look at his body of work in the playoffs with the Chicago Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy just wins.
Yep.
And Dustin Bufflin's an excellent player. Dustin Bufflin has a Stanley Cup, too. Don't want to take anything away from Buff.
You can't trust him in all situations like you can Brent Seabrook.
Like, Seabrook is a number one defenseman on a lot of other teams. They happen to have Duncan Keith there.
Right.
So I think, you know, guys like Phaneuf and Boychuk, I think those contracts will probably have more of an impact on these negotiations, Drew. But Seabrook is in the same ballpark. I mean, you're talking about top offensive defenseman, right? Seabrook's maybe a little bit below that tier, but he's still a guy that can get 30, 35 points every year.
Well, here's his numbers in the last 31 points, 41 points, 20 points in the lockout year, but whatever.
Yeah.
34 points, 48 points. 48 points is his career high, and that seems like much more of an aberration than anything else.
I mean, I said it before, he's a good offensive player. He's not the most dynamic offensive player, but he can play in all situations, guys, and he's got a good shot. And he can move the puck. Dustin Bufflin's the next level offensive player in terms of he can create off the rush and do different things for you. Doesn't take anything away from Brent Seabrook. I think Brent Seabrook is a tremendous defenseman. I just think you're talking about different terms in regards to duration of contract, and I think that'll affect the per year amount of money, of course, that he's going to be getting. I mean, obviously it does.
I got to tell you, I'm a little surprised. I thought that this contract, I mean, if Seabrook gets this 8 years, and I know that, I mean, he gets 8 years only because he's re-signing with the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
I think that this, you know, that says, you know, that Bufflin's agent can go to the Jets and can go to the open market and say the contract starts with either 8 for the Jets or 7 for everybody else in terms of length of years.
I mean, I just don't think you're getting that. I if it starts at 8 years, then certainly your cap hit's going down.
Then I think we've discussed before.
Signing Dustin Bufflin for 8 years. I mean, you'd be crazy to sign Dustin.
He doesn't have
Bufflin
the durability. And again, you listen to the show, you can go back years and years and years. I advocated for not trading Bufflin. I, in fact, called Bufflin the MVP of the team last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, I think he misses too much hockey to be given an 8-year contract. I think at most with Buff, you're probably looking at 5 or 6 years. That's my opinion.
No, that's completely entitled to it. I just think that
I think Buff wants to fish after those 5 years anyway. So,
well, that's possible. You know, maybe the player doesn't want to be playing until he's into his late 30s or early 40s. We don't know about
usually
that.
Usually, players make that decision. They don't mind at least having the security of having the option of playing
and then retiring at that point in time. Which is, the team itself doesn't generally mind that either. Get outside from underneath the contract at that point.
You also generally do not see players walk away from money.
For good reason, because
it's a lot
of money to walk away from.
Absolutely, but I don't think this changes the terms of Bufflin's asking price, to be honest, Drew.
No, Richie, I've walked away from money. Other people, other shows have asked me to join their shows.
Uh-huh.
I always just walk away from it. I mean, we have our own sandwich now.
That's true.
I mean, we've hit the zenith.
That's true. The zenith is a sandwich. And we'll talk about let's head to break. When we come back, I'll do a promo for Bernstein's Deli where we can talk about the sandwich. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, Winnipeg Jets over under for the 2015-16 season. Ten 15 in the morning, Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli. the home of the Illegal Curve sandwich. In case you missed Wednesday's program where we debuted the sandwich, what you have here is toasted buttered rye bread, thick cut city rye bread. You got chicken schnitzel. You have fried salami, you have fried onions, you have cheddar cheese, and you have honey mustard. Put it all together, it equals the Illegal Curve sandwich. It is fantastic. I can't stress that enough. Available now at Bernstein's Deli. Check them out, the corner of Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey.
Saw Aaron last night, and he was saying people are buying the sandwich, so
there
it's
you
available
go.
Now. Get it before, well, no, it's always going
to
be
It's always going to be available. Tweet us your photos, of course. Tweet us your photos of you buying the sandwich and eating the sandwich, and we'll favorite them and retweet them and all that good stuff.
Tweet your meat, right?
Yeah, tweet your meat. Jets over-under for the 2015-16 season. We like to do this at the start of every season. Last
year, going to review this, though? Like,
yeah, we'll look back at it. Last year, the Winnipeg Jets had 9 players, including Evander Kane, score double figures in goals. Drew Stafford fell just short with 9 goals in his 26 games played in Winnipeg. The Jets will have over or under 10.5 players score in double digits this year.
Ezra?
Ooh.
Who is?
I'm going to say over. I'm going to say the same amount as last year.
You can't say. So
then that would be under, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, they had double digits last year.
Well, you said over.
They had Jets had 9 players last year.
You're asking.
So I'm asking if it's over or under 10.5 players this year.
Oh, sorry.
Same as last year.
Sorry.
It can't be over.
No. Sorry. I'm going to say over that amount.
So the Jets will have 11
or... It's going to be more than last year. It's going to be 11.
11 or more players. Okay, Richie?
Yeah, I think Ehlers gets there, and I think Patan gets there.
Okay.
I'm going to say it's going to be under.
Under. So you do not think they have as many double-digit goal scorers?
No, I don't. I mean, I know they're balancing out the ice time this year, but you never know about the defenseman getting into that territory, right?
Right.
So that's why I wonder if they're also evening out that defense ice time. I'm going to go under.
Okay. Last season, and not including the lockout year, for the record, we don't include the lockout year in most of these questions, Blake Wheeler had 35 assists, his fewest number of assists in the season since the Jets returned to Winnipeg. In the two other full seasons he has played in Winnipeg, he had 41 and 47 assists, respectively. Over or under Blake Wheeler having 41.5 assists this year?
I'm going to say under. And he's already got a couple goals to start the season. I think we're going to see Blake Wheeler score more goals this year. He won't be that far off of that, Drew. It's probably going to be somewhere between 35 and 40.
I'm going to say under as well. He's a great player, but I think some of the other players are going to be contributing offensively too, so I think you'll see a little bit less out of him. Not too much less, but a little bit less.
In his 3 full seasons in Winnipeg, Brian Little has scored 23 goals once and 24 goals twice. Over or under Brian Little scoring 24.5 goals this season?
By the way, is Drew Turd Ferguson?
That was good. As you didn't answer the question, though.
Repeat the question.
No way you knew what the question was.
Over or under Brian Little scoring 24.5 goals this season?
I'm going to say over. I've liked Brian Little early on this season, and I think he can get close to 30 goals this year.
Well, Drew, I mean, if he plays 80 games, I have him going over. He usually stays healthy. Last year, he missed those 12 games, so I have him going over.
Are you keeping track of these, by the way, Turd?
We have the audio recording. I'll go back and track it after.
Right.
In his first year with the Jets, Mark Scheifele had 34 points. In his second year, Mark Scheifele had 49 points. Over or under Mark Scheifele scoring 55.5 points this season?
That's a tough one, Drew. Ooh. I'm gonna say over again. I think Scheifele's going to get 60 points this year.
60 points is a lot. I think he'll be over 55. I mean, you're seeing a young player get to, like, he's in his prime years right now. So you're going to see him elevate his game, and I think the biggest key there is, I know he played a lot with Scheifele and with Wheeler and Stafford last year. That was interesting, by the way, the comment of Drew Stafford in the post-game show on Thursday about how he's more comfortable back on the right side, which doesn't surprise me, but I thought it was interesting that he expressed that. But playing with Ehlers and playing with Perreault, if you do stay with skilled players, I expect, and he's getting better, stronger. I expect him to exceed that level.
Next question, Alex.
In year one, in 65 games played, Jacob Trouba played 17 minutes and 32 seconds of even strength ice time on average per game. In year two, also in 65 games played, he averaged 18 minutes and 1 second of even strength ice time per game. Jacob Trouba will average over or under 18 minutes and 45 seconds of even strength ice time per game this season.
Yeah, he was at 21 minutes in that first game against Boston. I'm going to say over. I think he's going to be closer to the low 20s this year.
I'm going to say slightly under, only because of how much depth they have on the right side. Now, of course, that could be changed if a guy like Dustin Byfuglien gets moved. But yeah, there's just so many. He will play a lot. Now, if he's playing with Mark Stewart, they're going to want to get the other guys out there, like you saw a correction after the first period of game one. So I'm going to say a little bit under.
Last season, lockout year excluded, of course, Toby Enstrom scored the fewest points in his NHL career with 23 points in 60 games played. The year prior, he had 30 points in 82 games played. Toby Enstrom will score over or under 29.5 points this season.
Yeah, Drew, you'd expect Toby Enstrom's numbers to be higher. You'd expect him to be around the kind of 40 to 45 point range, Richie, and that's because he gets the power play time. I think he's going to be over. I think he'll get back to 40 points this year.
The big thing, Drew, is if these guys stay healthy, and if Enstrom does play and stay healthy, I think I'm going to say he's going to be over.
Jets captain Andrew Ladd averaged 0.61 points per game in 2011-12, 0.69 points per game in 2013-14, and 0.77 points per game in 2014-15. Andrew Ladd will average over or under 0.71 points per game this season, which equates to 58.2 points in an 82 game if he plays all 82 games.
I think he'll be slightly over. I mean, he's already got 3 points in two games, right? So I think Andrew Ladd will probably be in the low 60s this year, so I'll say slightly over.
I'm going to say over, too. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's playing for his big deal. He's playing for his big contract, whether it's here or elsewhere. I expect him to be over.
I think I've picked over, by the way, on every single question.
Last season, Evander Kane wore number 9 and scored 22 points in 37 games played for the Jets.
Who's that?
This year, Andrew Kopp is wearing number 9, and Kopp will score over or under 25.5 points in his rookie season.
Under.
I don't think you like that question.
I'll say...
Well, 25 points for the...
Yeah, he's a rookie. I'll say under
rookie,
on that
like
one.
8 minutes a game.
Yeah.
In his last full season with the Jets, Alex Burmistrov scored 13 goals and 15 assists for 28 points in 76 games played. Burmistrov will score over or under 34.5 points in his return to the Jets this season.
I'll say over on that one. I think he'll probably be, based on, you know, being on a good third line, you know, playing with Adam Lowry there and Drew Stafford, I'll say he gets to 40 points this year.
I think you're right around the mark, Drew, in terms of that. I will say, I think his goal total goes down a bit based on the ratio from before, and his assists go up a bit. So I'll call it right on the nose there, even though it's a half point. I'll say 34.
Okay. If he keeps banking in backhands from his own zone into an empty net.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he'll have a good one.
That was a beautiful goal.
Yeah. Last season, the Jets goaltenders amassed a 5-on-5 save percentage of .928, good for 9th in the NHL. In the two previous full seasons in Winnipeg, the Jets had 5-on-5 save percentages of .919 and .915.
Drew, do you work for In Goal Magazine?
For the Jets to make the playoffs this season,
we wish he did.
The goalies will have to have a 5-on-5.
Get rid of them.
Will have to have a 5-on-5 save percentage of over or under .923.
So that's a yes or no answer then.
No, it's an over or under.
Well, you said for the Jets to make the playoffs, will these goalies have to have a 5-on-5?
That's not what I said. For the Jets to make the playoffs this season, the goalies will have to have a 5-on-5 save percentage of over or under .923.
Okay. I'm going
to
say,
if you said yes to that answer, there would not be an answer.
What is yes? I'm going to say...
You're going to take the therapists for 100?
I'm going to say under. I don't think it needs to be that good. Well, it needs to be close to that, I guess. That's why you picked that number.
That's why I asked the question.
I say it has to be around 918, 919.
I think it needs to be over. Even strength save percentage, I think it needs to be
over. 5-on-5 save percentage.
Over.
Over. In his
score enough goals.
In his Calder Trophy winning season, Tyler Myers had 48 points in 82 games played for Buffalo.
Yeah, he was really good that year.
Last year, in the 24 games he played in Winnipeg, Tyler Myers scored 15 points. Extrapolate that over a full season, and he would have had 51 points in 82 games played.
What does extrapolate mean?
I knew you were going to say that.
Tyler Myers will have over or under 44.5 points this season for the Jets.
Ooh. That's a lot of points, Drew. I'm going to say, you know what? I'll say over. I don't think it's going to be that much over. I think he'll be around 45 to 50 points, but I'll say over.
I'm going to say slightly over, too.
After
Especially it's possible Buffalo gets moved, and then he'd really elevate into a big-time scoring position.
Well, that leads into the final question. After the NHL trade deadline on February 29th, the Winnipeg Jets will have 21 games remaining in the regular season. This year, Dustin Byfuglien will play over or under 58.5 games for the Winnipeg Jets.
I guess the question is, will he be traded or not?
To some degree, yes.
I guess there's you could factor in injuries there.
That's why I gave you the buffer. There's 60, pardon the pun.
The buffer or the Byfuglien?
The buffer. There's 61 games until the trade deadline. Will Dustin Byfuglien play over or under 58.5 games for the Jets this season?
I don't want to say under. Pass.
There's no pass.
I'm passing.
Can't pass? You can't pass.
Pass it to Richie.
I'm going
to
say over.
Over. So you think he's around after the trade deadline?
Well, I told you I'm going to be consistent. I told you I think they're going to make the playoffs. So I think they're going to make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to trade him.
But do you think they sign him?
Well, that's a separate issue.
All right, now I don't. No, I don't think they sign him either.
Have you come? You're still going to pass?
Yep. I'll say over.
Over. Final question. This segment, of course, being sponsored by Bernstein's Deli.
Oh, hold on. But if you don't think they're going to make the playoffs, and you don't think they're going to trade him? You made a decision. You're on the record. You don't think he's going to trade him. I mean, you don't think they're going to make the playoffs, and you don't think they're going to trade Byfuglien. Interesting.
I also picked the Jets to finish 10th in the West. It's not like I picked the Jets to finish way out of a playoff spot. I said they'd finish 5 points out of a playoff spot.
It says 31st in the league.
That's 30 teams.
Final question. This segment was sponsored by Bernstein's Deli. The Illegal Curve sandwich. Yes, I'm leading into the question.
What is a commercial?
The Illegal Curve sandwich has been on sale for 3 days.
Okay.
Ezzy has had over or under 8.5 sandwiches.
Well, the only person that really knows the truth is me. And
what is a heart attack?
The answer is high body mass index. The answer is over. I've had 27.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News joins us to talk about the Sharks.